So we are continuing this series that we started a little while ago in Matthew's Gospel. We are looking at what's called the discourses in Matthew's Gospel, the extra bits that Matthew puts in that none of the other Gospel writers have in their Gospels. And in Matthew's Gospel, what we found is that there are several discrete sections where there is a long section that he has added in. This discourse that we're looking at the moment in chapter 18 is all about Christian community. So last week, we saw that true greatness comes from childlike humility. And we had the parable of the lost sheep. God comes to find us when we stray from him. And Andy reminded us that actually it's absolutely crazy. You know, if you were thinking in business terms, if one sheep wanders off, actually you cut your losses and you look after the 99. Not so with God. He is the God who comes searching for the ones who stray away from him. It's not God's way to do that. When we stray, God comes looking. If that's what God does, then what should Jesus' people be like? What should we be like? The idea is that when any one of us gets lost or drifts away, sometimes runs away or falls away, what should we as a church, as a community do? And of course the answer is actually be like Jesus. Do what Jesus would have done. Go looking. And this is the idea that we have at the beginning of the passage. Verse 15, we have the same kind of role to play. If your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault. Just between the two of you, if they listen to you, you've won them over. Actually, as a community, as a church, we really need this kind of teaching. Because we know that we are a community of easily lost sheep. We have this tendency to wander off. And yet we also know that as a church, we have a massively important God-given mission in this world. But it's part of the human condition, isn't it? We do. We sin. We get things wrong. We know we do. It's why we confess week by week. We have a habit when we are working together with other people that we might rub people up the wrong way. We do irritating things. I'm sure I do irritating things. I mean, obviously, I don't recognise it in myself because I only irritate other people. But you all know. It's true, isn't it? We do that. We might not notice it so much if we are less involved in the life of the church. It's like, I turn up at St Mary's, it's great. But actually, the more we get involved in the life of the church, the more we are invested in the way things are around here. And strangely, this phenomenon happens the more we are involved here. Because the more we are invested in the plans we have, the more we care about how they are worked out. The more we are invested in how we spend the money that the church has, the more we care about the plans that get made. We even start to care incredibly about the kind of coffee that we have. And these things, they can build up into tensions in the church. From my perspective, now I realise that my perspective is slightly different to everyone else's, but from my perspective, I do see all kinds of areas in our context, in the life of this place, where we have huge potential for both conflict and then potential to get things wrong in the way we deal with that conflict, and sin can come in, and the way we deal with it. And I'm going to be brave or foolish or whatever you want to call it, and I'm going to name a few of them, right? Because we all know that, for example, there's always a little bit of tension over the styles of music. The delivery is amazing, but the styles of music that we go for, tell me if it's not true. There's always a little bit of tension. How sacred is the building? Should it be used for community uses or just for worship? There's always a little bit of tension around questions of theology because we don't all agree precisely about everything. There's always the risk that people will feel excluded because of cliques and people who know each other better than others. And it can lead to tension. Here, particularly, we know all about language barriers and sometimes we make cultural assumptions. Oh, people behave like this. Do they if they come from a very different culture? And critically, because we actually get to know a very diverse group of people. If you look around the church now, you will realise that we get to know people who, in the ordinary course of life, we probably wouldn't get to know. And we may well come across people within our church speaking about actions that actually we hear it and we might be horrified. We think, oh, this is some kind of moral failure or even criminal. And that they're not addressing it. And so there is conflict. There's conflict over people wandering off. And we feel like we need to help to bring them back. I mean, don't look shocked. We know it's true. We know it's true. Not everyone agrees on everything. And yes, guess what? Sometimes we react sinfully to these disagreements. Okay, we know that that happens. But what do we do with that when we're trying to be a godly community? My assumption is that we are trying to be a God-following, God-believing kind of community. How do we deal with it when there are those kind of tensions? And first of all, the point first of all to make is not nothing. Jesus doesn't do nothing when there are these kind of tensions. It's exactly what he doesn't do. Just pretending that sheep never wandered off is not the Jesus way. It's not loving towards them. It's not loving towards our church community. And it's not loving towards our wider society. So we don't do nothing. But in verse 15, if you think that someone's disagreement is actually leading in a sinful, wrong, falling short of God's glory kind of direction, the first action? Well, guess what? Talk to them. The first action is simple. It is talk to them privately, one-to-one, if appropriate and possible. I realise that in not every situation it is appropriate and possible to have a one-on-one conversation. Maybe it's to do with safeguarding concerns or where someone is in immediate danger. Things do need to get escalated quicker than that. But actually, in most of the sort of churchy kind of things that we are talking about, go and have a conversation with them. Not making it a big deal. Not backing them into a corner, because this is the whole point of a one-to-one conversation. Giving the opportunity to explore why they are doing what they're doing or saying what they're saying. Maybe there's a completely good and right reason. And shock horror, it's you that's reading the situation wrong. But of course, it's a one-on-one situation. So no one gets embarrassed. No one is shamed in public for what they're doing or saying or thinking. It's the quiet word, the gentlest possible way to reset yourself or reset your brother or sister Christian. What a blessing you could be to them, right? What a blessing you could be to somebody. Just saying, you're doing that. Are you sure that's the right thing to do? Because actually just having someone point out something like that could be amazing. But we all know the quiet word doesn't always solve everything. Jesus knew that. So he continues in verse 16, but if they will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. Step two is just to widen the circle ever so slightly. Jesus is quoting an Old Testament law about witnesses. It's still not a big deal. We're still not putting somebody into a corner, boxing them in, putting everything in public. No, we're not doing that. It's gone from a private one-to-one, if you're still very sure you are right and this person needs help, and it's gone to bringing along one to two others. And this helps you both, right, in this situation. It helps both of you. It gives you both a reality check. Is this ever so slightly wider group concerned and agree that it's a concern, whatever is going on? Maybe the other voices are saying, come on, think about it. And maybe it resets your sister or brother Christian. Amazing. What a blessing that you would be to them. Maybe the one or two others are saying to you, nah, you're making a deal where there's not one to be had. And it helps reset you where you need to be reset as well. What a blessing they would be to you. So one or two others, widen the circle ever so slightly. This may work. The direction may change. No one gets embarrassed. No one gets shamed. It's all done quietly. It's in the background. It still may not work. Jesus knows this. He goes on in verse 17. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. And if they refuse to listen even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector, i.e. treat them as if they were not a believer in Jesus. If it goes beyond, take it to the church. And in this case, the church means the wider body of believers. And actually, within the Church of England, we have a really good and well-established mechanism, or mechanisms plural, for this. Because if it's a minor concern about the way we do things or strategy for mission within the parish, if it's local, then the church would probably mean you take it to the clergy of the parish, me or Andy or Jane, or to a church warden, David, at the back there, or maybe to the church council, the PCC. They're the people to get involved. If it's anything more serious, particularly, you know, I've got to tell you this, you know, it could be something to do with the clergy of the parish. It could be. It could be. And if it's serious enough to actually want to take it to the church, well, where do you go? And the answer is actually, you go to an archdeacon or a bishop. This is the point of being part of a wider church, that there are wider authorities that you can take things to. Andy and Jane and I are people under authority. So there are people you can go to, archdeacons or bishops. Chester Darcy's website, you can find all their contact details. Please don't. Anyway, you know what I mean. You can do that. And if it's anything to do with safeguarding concerns, you can take them to the parish clergy, me or Andy or Jane. You can take them to Rachel, who's just read for us. She's our parish safeguarding officer. Or it's equally absolutely fine, if there are those kind of issues, to go straight to the diocesan safeguarding team. Again, details on their website, very easy to find. I'm going to draw one kind of distinction here. One kind of distinction that goes beyond. Matthew is writing this gospel. He's using Jesus' words to actually speak primarily to the sort of the house churches of the Roman world. We are in a very different context. And that's why I say this as I say it right now. In our society, if there is an issue that is potentially criminal or where people are in immediate danger, it's gone beyond that kind of Roman house church, this is the way we deal with things stuff, that Jesus is speaking to. In our society, actually, these are immediate police matters. You dial 999 if somebody is in immediate danger, right? So if we're talking about that level of conflict, right, that's what you have to do. Take it straight to those kind of authorities. But actually, when it's churchy issues, how we do mission, the way, the style of our worship, the different things that we have as plans for a church, obviously, if you want to engage with them, with the church, what you need to do is you need to primarily talk to me or Andy or Jane about that. But notice in the passage how Jesus does elevate the authority of the church. It's a one-on-one conversation. Can these people be turned around? It's a one-to-one-to-two-to-three kind of conversation. Hopefully a little wider group can help them. It's a one-to-the kind of bringing it to the church as the sort of final authority. Jesus really elevates the authority of the church. What we bound is bound. What we bind is bound in verse 18. But just remember, the church is not me. The church is not you. The church is us. Us together. Us here in St. Mary's. Us here in Chester Diocese, which we are a part of. Us here in the province of York, the northern province in our country. That's who we're a part of. Us here in the worldwide Anglican Communion. Before we even get started on us as believers from every other denomination that's around. But actually, in some ways, this is really important. Because it means when there are these issues for conflict resolution within the church, actually, we tap into the level that is appropriate. Do you know what? The wider Anglican Communion are currently, over a very long period of time, having very strong words with the Church of England about our doctrine right now. They feel like we are, as an institution, they feel like we are wandering off in the wrong direction. They're having very strong words to try and help to bring us back in the right direction. They're tapping in at that level. Chester Diocese, you know, probably doesn't take much imagination to realise that Chester Diocese would discipline me if I acted in a manner unbecoming of the clergy. That's the language they use for it. They would, because that's the level that you have to tap into the wider church. And of course, things that are much more local, we deal with at the local level. This whole addressing of conflict, it's a pain, isn't it? Right? Are there any conflict avoiders out there? Any conflict avoiders? I think there probably are quite a few of us who would really rather avoid conflict, if at all possible. Maybe you are hating this sermon, and I apologise for that. But why would you do it? Why would you address conflict? Why not better just ignore it? You know, put up with it, play it down. And this is where the parable at the end of the passage comes in. The first servant is forgiven a massive and unpayable debt. 1,000 bags of gold. I mean, anyone got 1,000 bags of gold lying around? But that servant fails to forgive a tiny debt and becomes an outrage to Jesus. The massive debt that you and I have been forgiven is the debt that we owe to God for falling short of the perfect standards that he created us for. We do it all the time, don't we? We know it. We know that we are people who are in debt to God. And yet, in Jesus, we know that we are people who are forgiven that debt. His forgiveness is infinite. His forgiveness is Jesus' sacrifice on the cross to redeem both you and I and everyone around the world who turns to him. Our debt is infinite. His forgiveness is infinite. So how should we treat those who wrong us or with whom we have conflict? We should treat them with the same loving care. Our lives can be redeemed, and it is a miracle, is it not? As we turn to Jesus, our lives can be turned around. We can be forgiven. We can live as forgiven people. So can theirs. There is no conflict that you can think of in this world that is not possible to be resolved, and where forgiveness is not possible. They just don't exist. So we are called on by Jesus in this passage to address conflict, address it where somebody is doing something that we think is leading them away from him, where somebody is doing something that we think is damaging the church. Why do we do it? We address conflict because it's the loving thing to do. What would Jesus do? He goes and finds the lost sheep. So we address conflict because it's the loving thing to do. We address conflict because when the church is working well, as it should do, we expect the outcome to be forgiveness rather than condemnation. Right? If you are doing something which you know is not quite right, and somebody gently comes and, you know, puts an arm around you and said, "Have you thought about this?" They might be leading you back to be right at the centre of where Jesus wants you to be. What better place is there that you could possibly be in? And the outcome should be forgiveness rather than condemnation. The idea is that actually we know how forgiven we are by God, and therefore we have the power to forgive others. What a great place to be. So we address conflict because it's the loving thing to do. We address conflict because when the church is working well, the outcome should be forgiveness. We can head towards that confidently. We address conflict because the mission of the church to make Jesus known in the world is vital. It's vital for our world. So we can't let internal conflict fester and spoil that mission. If the world is looking at the church and all they see is our internal conflicts, which I'm afraid to say is quite often the problem, then what we are doing is letting our conflicts get in the way of Jesus' mission in the world. But we always address conflict gently, kindly, and under the authority of the church. One-to-one. So that nobody's embarrassed. No one's backed into a corner. And we do it knowing that actually it could come right back on us because we've read the situation wrong. One to a few. So that actually a bit of a wider opinion around the place can be brought to bear on whatever the situation is. and then before the church at whatever level is appropriate to tap into the church authority. All with this idea that it's the loving thing to do. We know that forgiveness is possible because we are forgiven people, and because the mission of the church is too important to let these things fester. So, the practical application, hopefully, is that we're sitting here thinking, actually, no, we're all right. And we're not going to, but actually, the practical application is we're not going to be permanently a church where everything's okay. Things will come up. And hopefully, we now have these ideas in our head of, well, how do we deal with that? I'm hoping there's not going to be a rush of people emailing me after the service. But there may be. And we need to address it because it's too important not to. So with that in mind, I'm going to close by praying for us. Lord, thank you that you are the God who forgives. Thank you that we know we are forgiven people because of what Jesus has done for us. Lord, help us to live out of that forgiveness, to live confidently enough to be able to help others to be back within the envelope of your love, back living the way that glorifies you. Because we know it's right for them, we know it's right for the church, we know it's right for your mission in the world. Lord, help us to have the discernment to know when to get involved, and help us to know when actually by doing nothing we're making a mistake, because there's a sheep that is lost and needs to be found in your love. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.